VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, since the school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School last February 14th, a month ago now, Parkland, Florida, there's been this renewed debate about gun control. And matter of fact, tomorrow, students in schools all across this nation are conducting a classroom walkout for 17 minutes. In memory of the 17 who lost their lives in Parkland, but others are using their protests as a means to push gun control measures, a means to push a very liberal agenda, ties to even the very liberal women's march that took place in Washington. So today we're going to discuss some of these matters going on across the nation and the topic of gun control. Yesterday, the White House just rolled out the President's School Safety Plan. So joining us in discussion, we welcome Dave Workman, Communications Director for the Second Amendment Foundation that exists to promote a better understanding about our constitutional heritage to privately own and possess firearms. Dave, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let's begin with this discussion on talk on this walkout tomorrow. We're told this is student-led. Is it?
Well, that's the story. I know that they're getting quite a bit of support from at least one major national gun control lobby, the Every Town for Gun Safety, which is actually making a little bit of a profit off of this, I guess, because they've been selling T-shirts to mark the event that's coming up on the 24th of March, and that's the March for Our Lives event. Tomorrow, I think, is just kind of a primer for it, but these T-shirts have been running at $30 a piece, and Every Town has certainly been there to support these kids and help spread this nationwide movement. So I think that it's not just student-led. They're getting some help.
Mm-hmm. And we understand, from some funding sources coming from some very liberal and certainly anti-Second Amendment groupings here as well. But as you know, Dave, since this shooting that happened, we keep hearing the term common sense gun control. And it seems that everybody you talk to, it's got a different meaning as to what that entails. Is there any common denominator in what's called common sense gun control?
Well, I think the common denominator with all of these groups that are pushing the so-called common sense gun control is that they want to restrict firearms as much as possible. They would like to ban certain classes of firearms, and I guess ultimately they would very much like to treat the Second Amendment as a government-regulated privilege rather than a constitutionally protected fundamental right. Hmm. So, I think that's where the collision of ideals is taking place here. The gun owners in America understand that the right to keep and bear arms is protected by the Constitution and the Second Amendment. The gun control people don't seem to recognize the fact that in the last 10 years, the U.S. Supreme Court has twice come down on the Second Amendment in rulings Heller in 2008 and McDonald in 2010 that clearly show that the right to keep and bear arms is a right and that it applies to individuals. It's a fundamental right, and it really is not dependent upon service in any militia. So I think this is where the philosophies have just collided with each other. Anti-gunners have a ton of money behind them, and the pro-gun rights people have a couple of Supreme Court rulings on their side. Mm. So we'll see how this shakes out. And maybe 20 years from now, we'll all look back and say, geez, you know, wasn't that kind of weird? But, this is going to take time to sort out.
Well, in the wake of the shooting in Florida, we saw the legislature in Florida pass a gun control bill, now the subject of a lawsuit from the NRA. What exactly passed in the Florida legislature?
Well, what Florida did was outlaw gun sales to people under age of 21. Now, under federal law, dating back to the Gun Control Act of 1968, young adults ages 18 through 20, it has been, and it still is, legal for them to purchase rifles or shotguns. Handgun sales are restricted to people over age 21, and it's been that way for 40 years now. So, 50 years, I guess. But what we've got now is a situation where Florida has just decided on its own to bump that age up, and the NRA certainly was not unexpected. I mean, I think they acted almost immediately and filed a lawsuit to stop that law from taking effect, to challenge the law, and we'll just have to see where that one goes, too. At the same time, a couple of national chain stores, Dick's Sporting Goods and Walmart, have decided just unilaterally to not sell guns or ammunition to anybody under age 21, and I got an email from one of my readers this morning that said Dick's Sporting Goods has experienced kind of a drop in value of its stock, so we'll see how that goes, too.
Yeah, and I understand there's been a lawsuit even filed against them.
Well, two lawsuits. One in Oregon and one in Michigan by two people in that age group, and it's been interesting to watch this process unfold because I think quite properly people in the 18 to 20 year age group are saying, hey, wait a minute, we're being discriminated against because somebody else committed a crime. Now you're telling us that a right that we've enjoyed for the past 50 years, we can no longer have that right? We got a little problem with that. And I can probably see that there might be more legal actions around the country as these stores are challenged. And again, you know, speaking as a journalist, because that's really what I do around here, I think that this is going to be just an interesting story to watch and to report. Because we've suddenly seen an interest in civics by a group of young adults that typically at that age, you know, we're all interested in going out and partying or going to college or graduating from high school or, you know, whatever it is we do. But now all of a sudden they're saying, hey, wait a minute, this is a civil rights issue, and I need to get into this.
And I'm guessing that there's a number of young people in that bracket that are going and purchasing long arms or handguns at this time as well?
Well, no. As I know, you can't buy a handgun until you're age 21 under federal law.
Mm-hmm. But the long guns.
You can buy a rifle or a shotgun. Mm-hmm. The first shotgun I bought, I was 19 years old when I bought that gun, and I still have it. It was a double-barreled shotgun. I've used it to hunt grouse and pheasants and all kinds of other things over the years, and it's one of my prized possessions. And I haven't harmed anybody with it. So if I was in that age group, I'd feel discriminated against, and I think rightfully so. You've got maybe 90, maybe 100 million gun owners in this country, according to some estimates. And I sat down one time and did a little math after I'd read an article in some publication that said about a third of Americans are actual gun owners. There's 330 million of us out there. So you divide that by three, you got at least 100 million gun owners, and of course a lot of them will refuse to acknowledge that they're gun owners because, depending on their social circles, it may not be socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm. So let's look if we put a ban on long guns, 18 to 21, would this have stopped the Parkland shooting from taking place? If we said no, it's against the law for 18 to 21 year old to purchase, this firearm, would this have stopped this shooting?
Well, in this case, it might have, because the suspect in this case is 19 years old. He did legally purchase that rifle. Cleared a background check, all of that stuff, because it's legal for him to have done that. But this suspect had raised so many red flags over the last several years that the revelations that have come out of the investigation following that shooting are just mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The FBI had been tipped off about this guy at least twice that we know of. Didn't follow up on either time. The Broward County Sheriff's Office had been called to his house somewhere in the neighborhood at 20 to 30 times. Now, this was over the course of a few years, but when you sit down and think about this, if you had a home in your neighborhood where the sheriff's department was constantly coming, call after call, they'd be there maybe four or five times a year, there's something going on. And it would seem to me that somebody really dropped the ball on this, and especially after this kid posted on social media someplace that he was going to become a professional school shooter.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, you might as well rent a billboard with lights and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Come and get me. And frankly, the authorities, I don't know why they didn't act on that information. They didn't even do a knock and talk, as far as I can tell. They had been to his house, but the FBI didn't follow up on this. So, I just don't know where this case is going to lead. But I do know that the suspect had been expelled from that school. That was reported pretty early on. And there was one report where I guess the school authorities put out a memo or something that if they see this kid coming on campus, especially with a backpack, they're to notify the administration.
Hmm. Wow. Well, it's interesting because, and it's, I guess it's my perspective that even if there had been illegal for him to have such a gun, that we know it was already illegal for him to be on campus. It's already illegal to murder, and yet none of these stopped him or deterred him from going ahead and carrying out the carnage that he did on that day. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be taking a look at the safety plan, the school safety plan that President Trump has unveiled, and also where does President Trump stand on these issues? It seems to be a little bit of fluidity that's happened in his position. So what's going on there? We'll be discussing that after the break. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how fast do stars change from one type of star into another?
Chris, evolutionists are fond of saying that changes in stars take millions of years to occur. But it's important to remember that they've never seen stars do anything for millions of years. And yet sometimes we do see stars undergo dramatic change quickly. Recently, a star was observed to change in only a few years from a white dwarf star about the size of the Earth to a giant star 80 times wider than the Sun, an increase in volume of over 500 million. Evolutionists used to insist that such changes took long periods, but when we see it happen rapidly. Evidently, the biblical doctrine of recent creation of all things is accurate. Back to Genesis, that's the view that fits the facts.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're addressing the issue of gun control today on the broadcast. Dave Workman is with us, Communications Director for the Second Amendment Foundation, and their website is saf.org, standing for Second Amendment Foundation, saf.org. Last evening, President Trump rolled out his school safety plan covering four different areas. I'll mention the area and have you comment on it. He talked about hardening schools. What do we know about hardening schools? How does that happen?
Well, I think part of his plan, and he's been very vocal about this over the last several weeks, he seems to like the idea of allowing teachers who are, you know, volunteers, not forcing anybody, but volunteer teachers and administrators or school staff to carry sidearms concealed or to have a gun handy, in effect to be the first responder in case there's a school shooting. I know that a lot of teachers' unions don't care for the idea, and a lot of other people don't care for the idea, but there are quite a few teachers out there who, it appears, like the idea quite a bit. I've done stories over the last couple of years in my role as a journalist and senior editor of the gunmag.com and writing at Liberty Park Press about school districts that have already armed teachers or administrators. There's a program in the state of Ohio called the FASTER program, and it's a firearms training program for educators. They've been quite successful, I guess, gotten a lot of reaction to that. There's one school district out here in Washington State where I'm at right now, in Toppenish, that has allowed armed staff on school grounds. So either that or having armed security guards in the building, maybe retired military or retired law enforcement who've got that kind of training also. Because up to now, schools have been what is considered a real soft target. It's easy to get in there, create mayhem, and escape, or as a lot of these people do, they commit suicide. And so they want to make that tougher. And frankly, I think of a lot of citizens in the United States are saying, well, yeah, you know, we don't like the idea of turning our schools into prisons almost, but by the same token, we want our kids to come home safe. They're going right there to get an education, mm-hmm, not to get shot by somebody. And, you know, you have to sympathize with the parents and the educators who really just want to do their job. I was talking to actually a high school kid who's doing a story for her high school newspaper earlier today, and I explained to her, I said, you know, I think by and large teachers and school administrators are really devoted to their children. They, you know, they want to give a quality education to these kids. They want the kids to be safe, and yet they don't want to have a situation where they can't defend those kids if there is an incident in school. I mean, we saw what happened at Sandy Hook. We saw what happened at Columbine High School. Of course, we also saw what happened at Pearl, Mississippi, when a kid decided to shoot up a school down there, and a vice principal who just happened to have a handgun in his vehicle ran and got that gun and actually stopped the kid, held him for police. As far as I know, that kid is still in prison and he's probably going to be there for the rest of his life. But there is an argument in favor of having armed staff on the school grounds if you don't have a police officer or a sheriff's deputy there, because it does take time for law enforcement to respond. And unfortunately, as we saw down in Parkland, when the deputies arrive, there's no guarantee that they're not going to rush right into the school and stop whoever's doing the shooting.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the Hardening Schools initiative. The second part of that initiative is strengthening background checks, calling on states to adopt extreme risk protection orders. Your comment?
Well, those are two separate subjects here. First, strengthening the background check. The firearms industry has been very active over the last few years, pushing a program, a piece of legislation, actually, that they call Fix NICS. And there are some problems with the National Instant Check System. Everybody will admit that. We all agree with that. And Congress, for whatever reason, has not taken action. Maybe now they will. But most of the school shooters, most of the mass shooters in this country, whether it happens at school or someplace else, they've already passed background checks. And a lot of that is because they've never committed a crime before. If you haven't committed a crime in this country, if you've never been adjudicated mentally incompetent or involuntarily put away for a while, you can pass a background check in this country, because that's really what the background check system was created to do, separate the good guys from the bad guys, and to do that as quickly as possible so that your Second Amendment rights can be exercised within a few minutes or within as little amount of time as possible. We've got to balance, again, this business about rights versus trying to prevent a tragedy. And unfortunately, some of these people, because they've never committed a crime before, they get through the cracks. They get in there and they can pass a background check. Now, other than trying to practice clairvoyance with some of these people, mm-hmm. I don't know how to prevent this kind of thing.
And comment on the extreme risk protection order.
Well, that's a situation where if a family member or some other person, a relative thinks that there's a person at risk of doing some sort of harm to himself or somebody else, they can go to the courts. They can get an emergency protection order and disarm that person. The police can come and get their guns. Now, there is a problem with that, though, at least in my mind. They may disarm somebody, but they leave them on the streets. They don't take them in and arrest them, at least not under the legislation that I've seen. And there's a problem, because if the person is out there and if the person has the intent to create mayhem, I guarantee they're going to figure out a way to do that, whether they rent a truck and run over a bunch of people or build a bomb and blow people up. I mean, my gosh, look at what's been happening in Austin, Texas. A couple of bombings yesterday and one a couple of weeks ago. This is a situation where a gun isn't even involved, and you've got a whole community that's really on red alert. And, the worst school massacre in the history of the United States was Bath, the Bath Schoolhouse up in Minnesota. And there, the guy didn't use a firearm either. He blew the school up with dynamite, killed, 58 people. We need to keep that in perspective, that when somebody has evil on their mind, they're going to figure out a way to carry out whatever it is they want to do.
Yeah. Another element he calls for is that of mental health reform. Your thoughts?
Well, I haven't found anybody who won't admit that we need to do a lot more in the area of mental health. What's been fascinating to me over the last couple of years, Alan Gottlieb, who is the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, has become a champion in an effort here in Washington State to prevent suicides, and he's working with the Forefront group over at the University of Washington. They've gotten people from the medical community, from pharmacies, firearms, gun range owners, firearms instructors. All of these people are together in this effort, and that's one component, I think, of addressing a mental health issue that, you know, for a long time we've just kind of let that go by the wayside. We can see that with the number of homeless people out there who just, you know, for lack of a better term, they seem to be derelicts. You know, they do have mental health problems, a lot of those folks, and for reasons, whatever, money or maybe to people just don't care. They're not getting the treatment that they really do need. So we need to, pick up that ball and run with it a little bit more.
The other issue that the fourth prong of his plan is that of reviewing funding proposals for preventing school violence. Is that beefing up security at the school? What do we know about that?
Well, I'm not too sure there's been a definition on that yet. Mm-hmm. If they could maybe beef up security by locking more doors or hiring somebody or making it easier to report the weird student in class or maybe the strange guy hanging around the school campus. That could entail a whole lot of things. I haven't seen really any details on that. Sounds pretty good on paper, but let's see what is really involved in that before we say, yeah, let's do that, or nah, maybe we better not try that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're also looking at being able to do all of this stuff without violating somebody's civil rights. And that sometimes is a very delicate, very thin line situation.
Were you surprised Governor Scott signed that into law in Florida?
A little bit, but not entirely. You know, he was under a lot of pressure. I think that certainly we've got an election coming up. He's going to be in it. He's running for United States Senator. He's got to appeal to a lot of people and demonstrate that he's mainstream, that he will represent all views. And I think the opposition, the Democrats, were going to try to paint him into a corner as a toady for the National Rifle Association. And, you know, Rick Scott, I don't think he is, but he simply agrees with, quote-unquote, the common sense that most of us share, that bad guys are bad guys and good guys ought to be left alone.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Dave Workman, Communications Director for Second Amendment Foundation. Just give us a word about your organization before we hit the break. Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Give us a word about Second Amendment Foundation.
Sure. It's was founded about 40 years ago, about more than 40 years ago, and its chief purposes are education and litigation. It's a 501c3, so we're a tax-exempt organization. We don't get into the political arena at all, but we do advise our members of legislation that may be coming up that could be a threat to their rights and that they need to pay attention to.
And again, the website, saf.org, saf.org. We're going to take a quick break here. If you'd like to speak with our guest today with a question or a comment, our number 800-733-9829. We'll be right back. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
The Middle East has long been spiraling out of control, causing global uncertainty and fear. What does this turmoil mean for Israel, and why has peace been so elusive? In the book, Israel on High Alert, Bible teacher Ron Rhodes offers a clear view of the present situation and the future faced by Israel. The book explores the history of the Middle East conflict, what Scripture says about the ongoing battle, God's plan for Israel, and how the events in the Middle East affect us today. Touching on everything from Islam to the current efforts to rebuild the Jewish temple, this book will guide you through the past, present, and God-ordained future for Israel. You'll find assurance in knowing that even amid chaos, God's plan is already in action and will not fail. Israel on High Alert is available from VCY America as our way of saying thank you for your support of $16 or more. To obtain a copy, call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We're speaking today with Dave Workman, Communications Director for the Second Amendment Foundation. And again, their website, saf.org. Just before we get to calls here, I noticed, Dave, that your organization, Second Amendment Foundation, along with the Illinois State Rifle Association, have filed a lawsuit in federal district court challenging the East St. Louis Housing Authority's ban on firearm possession by residents of government-subsidized housing in the community. Boy, to me, it sounds like this is akin to denying these folks their Second Amendment rights, but tell us what's happening.
Well, we've got a lady who we're working in behalf of. She's a resident of this housing, public housing authority, and we're just calling her in due at this point because she's actually trying to conceal her identity so to protect her from an abusive ex partner. Long story short, the housing authority has this regulation that you can't have firearms inside the public housing units, and they maintain that there's security and the police will protect you. Well, this is not SAF's first rodeo on this subject in the state of Illinois, and one would think that they'd learned a lesson the first time around. A few years ago, there was a case let me pronounce this, Winbigler versus Warren County Housing Authority. And the NRA has actually filed similar cases, too. And bottom line here is you don't give up your constitutional rights when you move into public housing. You don't.
Mm-hmm. Any more than you would eliminate your right to free speech or freedom of religion or anything.
That's exactly where I was going. You move into public housing, you don't have to zip your mouth shut. You don't have to stop going to church wherever you want to go to. You don't give up any other civil right. So why should you give up the right to keep and bear arms? And certainly that boils down to the right to self-protection. The oldest human right around is the right of self-preservation. I think that's been recognized down through the ages as the really basic fundamental right. You have a right to continue living. And if you have to defend yourself to do that, well, you know, that's the way it goes. I think it's important to keep this in perspective that, you know, we pay attention to this particular civil right because nobody else seems to. And I remember seeing a news clip or a video of a period of questioning by the House Committee on Oversight here a few years ago when Trey Gowdy, the congressman from North Carolina, was asking somebody from the Obama administration, what other civil right do you need to jump through all of these hoops in order to exercise? You know, to buy a gun in this country, first you got to get permission from the FBI. That's the next check. Then you might have to go through various permit processes at the state level. What other civil right is treated that way? And there's none of them that I know of. So here again, as I mentioned early in the program, a lot of these governments want to treat the Second Amendment as a regulated privilege rather than a constitutionally protected right.
So lawsuit's been filed, and
in federal district court, as you noted, and it'll just have to see how it shakes out. It was just a few days ago that the lawsuit was filed, so it's still way in the early stages, and it would be nice if somebody would remind the public housing authorities that, hey, you know, this has already been adjudicated. You know, might be a good idea to pay attention to what happened before.
Let's go to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. I was, in light of what we're talking about today, I wanted to kind of hopefully make a contribution to anybody who's never heard of it, that one of the best ways that you can defend yourself in, like, schools and public places is the practice of avoid, deny, and defend put out by Texas State University. The principal supplier and trainer, which is KDL Associates, KDL Solutions, situated actually right here in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Walmart has to use it. I'm an associate, and it's a very smart training tool to deal as a civilian in the workplace or any public place in an active shooting scenario.
Dave, are you familiar with this?
I've heard something about them, yeah. And there are a number of programs out there that offer self-defense training. I know there's shooting schools out there. There's schools where they teach martial arts, where they teach avoidances. Even, you know, the NRA refuse to be a victim program is part of that wide community of instruction. So, yeah, there are a lot of options out there for people who really do care about their personal safety and security. And you know, it would be stupid of me not to suggest that if you've got the inclination to go to get some training, some extra instruction, go do that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I was going to say further, if I could, that, you know, we talk about defending ourselves and getting hard and getting armed up and everything. But, you know, with all of the ability to do all that, it most definitely involves legalities. And being trained to use it and do it responsibly. And I'm saying that as a direct active shooter and gun owner myself.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. Yep. Roy is next. Go ahead, Roy. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have three concerns about tomorrow's planned nationwide student walkout from schools for 17 minutes. First of all, the agenda. Are they all just walking out to have a parade of mourning for the victims, or are they demanding confiscation of guns from law-abiding citizens? Mm-hmm. Secondly, how come even in conservative Republican areas, many school superintendents are liberal, and so are the principals and the school boards, and they're issuing statements about how they're going to be organizing these student demonstrations? Well, back in the anti-war demonstrations in the 1960s, those were organized with the students themselves. Mm-hmm. How come we have these liberal administrators have dumbed down the kids? Have they dumbed down the kids so much the kids can't even organize their own demonstrations? And third and lastly, is this going to be an open door for more different demonstrations? Will the school sponsor anti-abortion demonstrations, or which I sort of doubt, or will they sponsor guaranteed annual income demonstrations when Martin Luther's assassination anniversary comes up next month? Mm-hmm. How about this idea of liberal bureaucrats organizing student demonstrations?
Thank you, Roy. Dave, a response to this.
Well, yeah, we won't know what the students are going to be asking for until after they ask it. That's a given. So, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens tomorrow for these 17-minute walkouts. I know they've got a larger thing planned on the 24th, which is on a Saturday, and presumably there will be thousands of people around the country who get involved in those marches and demonstrations. You know, as far as the schools opening themselves up to this sort of thing, you got to remember something. It's the responsibility of people to vote. If you don't want "quote unquote" liberal people running your school districts, get out there and vote for somebody who's a conservative, or find somebody who has conservative values to run for school board positions. That's pretty simple, and yet it seems historically that you find more people of the liberal persuasion who run for these positions. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's okay for anybody to run for some kind of a public office if they want to. But if you want balance, the first thing you got to do is vote. And that I'll offer some criticism that I think is well deserved for people in the conservative community. You don't vote. Gun owners, sometimes they make me just absolutely crazy when they say, oh, I never vote because my vote doesn't count. Well, of course it doesn't count if you don't use it. Right. You got to take the time, get up off the couch, go to the polls. Here in Washington State, you don't even have to do that. It's all mail-in ballot. All you got to do is just sit there at the kitchen table, fill out a ballot. It takes about 5 minutes if you really know what you're doing. Stick it in the mail, and that's how people vote out here. There's really no excuse, and I mean none, for not voting. You can get an absentee ballot if you're going to be out of the country, if you're going to be on the road someplace. You can do all of that stuff. It just takes a little bit of effort. And as a citizen, it's your responsibility to vote.
Amen. Let's go to Reggie in Mobile, Alabama. You're on the air.
Yeah, so thank you for taking the call. I've been thinking for some years that these are some very unusual, you know, mass killings in, you know, far as the past, I guess, 20, 30 years. And in order to be able to determine, you know, who commits a crime, you have to find a motive or find out who benefits. And it seems like every time they have a mass shooting, that the gun control people are the ones that jump right on it.
Well, sure. A couple of years ago, Alan Gottlieb and I did a book together called Dancing in Blood. That sounds just awful, and frankly, it really is. The gun prohibition lobby acts almost immediately. It's not spontaneous, but they're pretty fast to go out and exploit these terrible tragedies in order to push their political agenda. You know, that's what they do. They've become very good at it. And they get all kinds of opportunities. They get all kinds of attention from the press to continue doing that. And we've got to be just as reactionary, just as responsive to that. We got to stay on our toes about this. If you live in a community where there's an active gun control organization, you need to start your own Second Amendment group to be able to respond to these guys. Make yourselves known to the local reporters. Say, hey, look, if you've got a question, call me up. I'd be delighted to respond to some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just out there being a punching bag.
Reggie, thanks for the call. Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering, wouldn't it be easier to arm our teachers and other school employees with tasers as opposed to guns?
Your response, David.
Well, a taser can be a contact weapon. And quite frankly, I wouldn't want to be the person taking a taser to a gunfight. You're at a disadvantage already. Nobody's going to stand still long enough for you to zap them with a taser. And if they're shooting at you with a real firearm, you're in trouble already. I know it's an awful, horrible thing to consider shooting another person. It's what a friend of mine once called an unnatural act. And, you know, you got to take that into account.
Nancy, thank you for your call. We're going to take a quick break. Dave Workman is our guest, SAF.org, and also thegunmag.com. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk. For the Worldview Week in a Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewtimes.com. Well, sadly, major pastors out there in America, like Matt Chandler, president of Acts 29, who's planting churches all across America, are promoting the communist Marxist propaganda talking points when it comes to white privilege.
We have undercover video from the 15th annual White Privilege Conference in Madison, Wisconsin. The instructors are saying that if you're a capitalist, if you're a Christian, if you hold to Christian values, that's white privilege and that's racism. Well, white privilege is a lie, and we can prove it at many levels. A Pew Research study in 2015 unveiled some very important findings. Did you know that Indians from India and Asians are making far more money than white Americans? The report showed that the median annual household income and households headed by Asian Americans is $73,000 compared with $53,600 among all U.S. households. Clearly, there is no such thing as white privilege.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, we have Dave Workman, Communications Director for the Second Amendment Foundation. And Dave, I understand, I see a press release here from your organization that you are seeing a huge spike in members and donors from young adults. I mean, we're talking that 18 to 20-year-old age bracket.
Yeah, carrying us right back to the first segment that we did here earlier. Alan Gottlieb, who is the head of founder of SAF, came into my office yesterday and said, "Hey, look, you know, this is going to stun you, but the turnout, the response, the memberships, the contributions from people in that age group have gone up 1,200%."
Right.
And my chin still hurts from where it hit the floor. And the sister organization, the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, interest in that group has gone up about 500%, he told me.
Wow.
And I did a story about this yesterday at Liberty Park Press and at the Gun Mag, where I'm senior editor, and for Conservative Firing Line, which is another online publication I write for on a daily basis. And you know, I think the reaction to that has just been astounding. So I guess what it boils down to, though, is suddenly these kids, I call them kids, but these young adults, it's their ox getting gored. Well, welcome to the gun community. You know, it's been our ox getting gored for decades. So join the party.
St. Mary, West Virginia. Russell, you're on the air.
Yeah, I watched a program there a couple weeks on PBS, I think it was, where all these feminists were together and they were complaining about the scantily clad women on the video games. They didn't say nothing about how many people their kids had to kill to get to see them scantily clad women. And I think they ought to, if they're going to walk out over school shootings, they ought to do away with their violence and entertainment.
That, thank you, Russell, for raising that. Violence and entertainment, whether it be video games, whether it be Hollywood productions. Your thought, Dave?
Well, I saw a message the other day on social media, and it's an interesting question. I'm kind of trying to figure out in my mind how to write about this, but a guy posted a message and said, you know, maybe we should tell Hollywood that they can no longer use AR-15s in movies. You can't do shoot 'em up movies anymore. You've got to stop the violence in movies. You've got to do something else, and just see how well they take that. Because I know that the screams about the First Amendment and about art and all of that stuff are just going to be loud and overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting way to throw that back in right. Hollywood's face.
Thank you, Russell. Ron is calling from Mansfield, Pennsylvania. You're on the air.
Thank you. Dave, great program. I'm a retired federal agent. I worked 26 years in Boston. They had strict gun control laws. It never made my job any easier. I arrested about 100 people in 26 years. Most were armed. None had permits. And now we talk about these stricter laws. And they say, well, how are we going to prevent this? And I ask, what law prevents anything? I only stop the criminal when I put the cuffs on him.
Well, bingo. I think you should move to the head of the class, because you certainly just defined the problem. Good guys obey the law. Bad guys don't care about the law at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, your experience as a federal agent, and by the way, I didn't do it, the warrant's no good. The reaction I get from all of the friends that I've made in law enforcement over the years is that, hey, we don't care about the people who've got carry licenses and permits and stuff. You know, they're not the problem. The problem is these bad guys who they just ignore the law. You know, why do we call them outlaws? Why do we call them criminals? It's because of what they do.
Yeah. Thank you, Ron. Ron, also another Ron in Crystal Falls, Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Two comments. One, I don't hear a lot of talk about the psychotropic drugs that these people are taking, which most of these shooters were on when these shootings happened. And two, back in the 60s, we used to complain about could go into the Army and get shot and kill and be killed, and we couldn't drink. Now, if they get this law passed that you have to be 21, should everybody in the service just drop their rifles and say, you know, I'm not allowed to use these no more?
Okay, thank you for the questions. Psychotropic drugs.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about that. I'm not sure if there's been much research, that's something that we really should take a look at, because I know from past reports that at least some of these mass shooters have been on some kind of behavior modification drugs of some sort, and we just don't know what that does to some people, and I think we need to take some time to figure that out.
And military members coming home and saying, sorry, you can no longer carry a gun?
Well, that's insubordination. They could get court-martialed for it, and besides, I don't think too many soldiers would just come up with that and say, yeah, I'm tired of this, I can't have a gun in civilian life, I'm going to go home. Well, the government just handed you a rifle and all the ammunition you want. I mean, you know, why blow a good thing?
Yeah, no, I think he was talking more about serving on the battlefield, coming home and having to give up their weapon.
Well, yeah, I mean, that in itself is just bizarre. When somebody goes off to fight to defend our Constitution, when they come home, they ought to be able to exercise every bit of that Constitution, period.
We are down to just seconds left, and I apologize to other callers that we're not going to be able to get to any more calls. Dave Workman, our guest today on the program, Communications Director for the Second Amendment Foundation, their website, saf.org, saf.org. And as he mentioned also, he's senior editor of the Gun Magazine. Thegunmag.com is the website there. And Dave, thank you for taking the time. I know you've been in high demand, but thanks for talking with our listeners today on this critical issue.
Well, very kind of you to have me back again, and one of these days when nothing is happening, maybe we can chat a little further. It's just been crazy the last couple of weeks here, so we've been pretty busy.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dave.
You bet.
And, folks, thanks for tuning in as we talk about this matter of gun control today. Certainly much debate going on. Many state legislators have introduced some legislation. The question is, where does it go from here? And thanks for listening to our discussion today.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.